You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 20th of September, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I want to talk a little bit about Sweden, because Sweden appears to be a nationalist's success story with the recent election, and it is hoped that the same thing is going to happen in Italy when they have their elections. The BBC are fretting about a so-called far-right leader that looks like they're going to win the polls in Italy at the upcoming election. And as I say, we've had the same thing happen in Sweden. In Sweden's September the 11th election, the country's four centre-right parties won 176 seats, while the centre-left coalition that included the ruling Social Democrats got 173 seats. Following that, Andreas Norlén, the Speaker of the 349-seat Swedish Parliament, the Riksdagen, asked Ulf Kristersson, the leader of the Moderates, to see if he can form a governing coalition. And that's really quite surprising, because the Moderates weren't the second most popular party. The Social Democrats got 107 seats, and the Sweden Democrats got 73 seats, and the Moderates got 68 seats. So the Sweden Democrats are the largest second party in Sweden. So why is it that the Sweden Democrats were not asked to form the coalition? And apparently there's already one right-wing party there that is saying that they don't want to work with the Sweden Democrats. But democracy tells us that they are the second most largest party in Sweden, and they represent a large portion of the population. So hopefully we will see the Sweden Democrats as part of the ruling coalition there. Now, they're not ethno-nationalists, but they are civic nationalists, and just to have civic nationalists in power is much better than having liberal progressives in power. And I want to get into an article today which is talking about why it is that the Sweden Democrats have done so well in this recent election. And remember, we talked a little bit about Sweden a couple of weeks back, about the shootings that went on there and the gang violence that's been going on in Sweden and its connection to Sweden's immigration policy. Under a bright streetlight, Christian Lindmark sat with his hand outstretched, begging for krona from evening diners, merrily leaving restaurants on Visagatan, a smart avenue in Sweden's capital, Stockholm. Beside him, Christian had a plastic bag containing his few possessions, a spare pair of socks, some clean boxer shorts, and a half-empty pack of cigarettes. When I bought him a coffee from a nearby five-star hotel last weekend, he clutched the polystyrene cup to keep his hands warm in the bitter autumn night. "The government does not help Swedes in their own country," he said in a matter-of-fact tone. "Instead, they give state money and warm homes to foreign people who come to live here." And of course, that is the same throughout Europe. Over here in Britain at the moment, we have illegal immigrants that are turning up on our shores trying to break into the country from France. They're picked up by the RNLI. The people traffickers phone the British police before leaving to say that they are sending people over. And Border Force go and pick them up, they ferry them to the shore, and then they put them up in four-star hotels with a view to then processing their asylum claims and giving them houses to live in. While all the while, we have our own homeless on the streets of Britain who are not being put up in four-star hotels. So we have the same thing that's going on in Sweden, and it has resulted in Sweden, in these Sweden Democrats winning the election, or becoming the second largest party, rather, in the election. 52-year-old Christian from Uppsala a cathedral town 35 minutes by train from Stockholm, lost his job as a butcher after a divorce. He is homeless, like hundreds of his fellow countrymen, also begging on the capital's streets. Last Sunday, he cast his vote in a national election in this country, renowned worldwide for its generous welfare state, multiculturalism, and wide open door to refugees. Well, it is also world famous now for having the highest amount of gun violence in Europe. I think the highest amount of rape, which is going on there as well, which is all things that we would expect to see in multicultural areas, because there are far more victims, far more potential victims in a multicultural area, because it's always going to be much harder to carry out a crime against your own ethnic group. And we also have different statistics for the number of violent crimes that are carried out by ethnic groups as well. White people usually only commit about a quarter of the amount of crime if you go on the prison numbers of the black community. For instance, I saw government statistics the other day in Britain for 2021, and they showed that blacks make up 3% of the population, and yet they made up something like 12 or 15% of the prison population. And we find that same statistic in whatever country we go to. They're always 4 to 5 times as many of them in prison as their percentage of the population. And of course, the left will say, well, that's because the whole system is racist, all the judges are racist, all the police are racist. Of course, that doesn't make sense, does it? Because you can just apply that to the number of men that are in prison. 99% of people that are in prison are male. Is that because the judges and the police are anti-male? No, it's because men are more likely to commit crimes. So we have Sweden, which is now known for having a very high crime rate, and the Swedes are fed up of this. And we have this party here, the Sweden Democrats, that are talking about actually doing something about this. And they actually identify what the cause of the problem is, which is multiculturalism. Sweden's liberal dream was pioneered by the nation's social democratic movement, whose parties have topped national polls ever since the end of World War I. So they have been in power since 100 years. For about 100 years, this party have actually been in power, and now they've finally been toppled by a right-wing coalition. This latest election has seen a convulsive change. Swedish voters supported an alliance of 4 right-wing parties, including one named the Sweden Democrats, which stands accused of historical links to neo-Nazism. I think those links are, they used to have a member that said he supported National Socialism or something like that, and they then got rid of him. So they don't have links to neo-Nazism. They're not ethno-nationalist, as far as I'm aware. Final poll results showed on Thursday that the right-wing bloc has now chosen the new prime minister, elbowing aside the ruling Social Democrats. And surely the new prime minister should be one of the Sweden Democrats, since they are the most popular party. But I don't think they are. And if you have a look online, it tells you that Sweden's new prime minister is the same as the old prime minister. So the prime minister is not from the second most popular party. To the shock of liberals in Sweden and across the world, the voters backed tougher immigration controls, foreign criminal deportations, and stiffer punishments for the rising number of young men who have been plaguing their once peaceful country with shootings and drug dealing. Well, who would have thought it that the Swedes themselves do not like being replaced in their own country? They do not like the increased crime that they see around them. And they can see that the crime is being carried out by a particular demographic, and so they quite clearly and obviously think the solution will be to remove that demographic. The violent crimes are getting worse, says Torsten Ilofsson, a former Swedish police chief and candidate for the Christian Democrats, a party in the new right-wing alliance. These used to happen in Stockholm and other big cities such as Malmö and Gothenburg, but now they have spread to small towns everywhere. And it's wherever multiculturalism goes, that's where you get the violent crimes. And of course, because there's this big push to get diversity in everywhere, it means that you have white areas that get targeted for an immigrant population to be transferred there. And once they are transferred there, then you get the criminals amongst that population that then start carrying out crimes against the indigenous population. Because, as I say, it's easier to carry out crimes against a different ethnic group than your own. In just a decade, Sweden has gone from having one of the lowest rates of fatal shootings in Europe to the highest, according to the Swedish National Council for Crime Prevention. This year is on track to break records, with 44 gun deaths by mid-August, close to the highest annual tally of 47 in 2020. Sweden doesn't have guns, they're not legal, they're illegal, and yet somehow there are all these shootings going on. And as we found out last time, the leaders of these gangs are all foreign, and the people that get prosecuted for killing people with these guns are also all foreign, or of foreign ancestry to Sweden. It was against this troubling backdrop that the election, in which the anti-immigration Sweden Democrat Party seized an astonishing one vote in five, took place. So 20% of the population are supporting the Sweden Democrats, and yet we see this attempt to keep them out of the coalition, and instead of them being asked to form a government and a coalition, we see the third most popular party, the moderates, being asked to form this coalition. Late last month, with electioneering underway, there was a shootout by masked youths at a children's playground in Eskilstuna, a pretty manufacturing town an hour and a half's drive from Stockholm that is home to a Volvo car parts factory. Two rival gangs, one from the town's Arby suburb, the other from a suburb a mile away, were involved, and a five-year-old boy was hit by a bullet as he played with other children at 7 in the evening. And that's the news story that we opened the podcast with a week or so back when we were discussing this. And as it says here, it was rival gangs, and the gang leaders are all of foreign extraction. So this was definitely foreigners that were shooting this. Of course, they may have had Swedish citizenship, but they're of foreign ancestry. The boy, from a Syrian family with a flat in state housing blocks overlooking the tree-lined playground, was terrified, hiding his head in his hands close to a climbing frame when the firing started before he was wounded in the stomach. And of course, this is also similar to what recently happened in Liverpool, where we had gangsters and a shootout, and an unsuspecting mother opened up a door and the gangsters ran into the house and ended up shooting and killing her daughter. A mother in her 20s was hit too as she sat with her four-year-old girl. She was from elsewhere in Sweden, visiting her Iraqi Kurd relatives in Arby, and ran for safety before collapsing on the grass, blood spreading over her blue jeans after she had been shot in the hip. So what we effectively have here is people of foreign extraction shooting guns and people of foreign extraction being shot. I mean, multiculturalism doesn't help anybody. You just end up with more crime, more victims, and you end up with the criminals from these foreign countries moving to white countries because they know that they can make more money there. So that's what's going on here. You've got the criminal types that have started up these gangs. They're making a fortune in the drug running. They know that if people try to criticize what's going on, people try to identify them as the gangsters, they will be accused of hate speech, they'll be accused of racism. So they know that their crimes will be covered up. I mean, it's very tempting, isn't it? The crimes aren't going to be covered up in their own country where they actually come from, but they will be covered up in the white countries because the mainstream media doesn't want to rock the boat. They don't want people to see the negative effects of multiculturalism. They just want to promote diversity. And the criminals in these foreign communities, they know this very well. The crossfire between the gangs standing on opposite sides of the playground lasted for nearly 3 minutes. Bullets whizzed past tables where families were enjoying picnics before the shooters melted away into the trees and escaped. A police investigation was continuing last week. When we visited the playground after the shooting, worried mothers showed us bloodstains still marking the ground near a children's roundabout. A 38-year-old woman called Fatima, who has five girls and arrived in Sweden as a refugee from Somaliland 16 years ago, said some of the children were on the trampoline and had taken off their sandals. They ran away barefoot. to escape the shots. I mean, this is like living in a war zone, isn't it? It's like living in Somalia. And you have heard about some Somalian mothers in London, in Britain, that are actually sending their teenage sons back to Somalia because it is safer for them in Somalia than it is in London. In London, they're going to be encouraged to join gangs, get involved in knife fights, get involved in drug dealing. If they go back to Somalia, that there is a Christian ethos in Somalia that their children will imbibe, and they won't be so inclined to join these gangs. I mean, it's quite incredible, isn't it, that it's safer in Somalia for a black teenager than it is in London. Fatima, a care worker, is so afraid for her children that she plans to leave the housing block in Arbi. It is more dangerous here than Somaliland, she says. Soon, someone will die. So it's just as dangerous over in Sweden as it is in London. Another resident, 45-year-old Parvina of Iraqi Kurd origin, revealed that her handsome young son Ilyas, aged 9, was a few feet from a bullet that hit the ground. Children are frightened they will be shot if they play outside their own homes, she said. It is the third time this year that the rival gangs have staged shootouts at the playground. Ilyas, who has seen two of them, said in a small voice when we visited, "It is scary to live here." Yet the mothers and local politicians say the playground gangsters came from the same communities of Iraqi Kurd, Somali, Afghan and Syrian refugees as theirs, families that had all been given sanctuary in Eskilstuna. So it is part of these communities, these gangsters, that are doing this. They deal in drugs and make their money that way. They don't have jobs, explained Parvina. Some are still pupils at the local school, and we know their families' names. So if they know their families' names, why is it that the police are still having to investigate this and they haven't actually caught the criminals yet? Again, this is another problem with multiculturalism. If part of your you know part of your community is criminal and they're involved in criminal activity, you're going to be more likely to try and talk them out of the criminal activity than you are to actually go to the police and say, these are the guys that were doing the shooting. Because if you were to do that, then it means you're grassing up a member of your own community, doesn't it? And it's particularly in the Islamic community, they have a law in Islam that you should not inform on other Muslims to the kafir, to the non-Muslims. So because they would rather deal with these things within their own community. So this is what we see happening here, even though it is Kurds, Somalis, Afghans and Syrians that are suffering from this. And it is Kurds, Somali, Afghans and Syrians that are doing the shooting, doing the gangster behavior, doing the drug dealing. They're not going to tell the police about it. They're going to try to deal with it within their own community. And we also see here that they don't have jobs. And the previous Swedish government have tried to say that that's the reason why they're doing all this gangster behavior. They tried to say that if white Swedes don't have jobs, then they all become criminals as well. And of course, that is just not true. Few understand more about the spiralling youth violence in the town than Elin Hanby, principal at Eskilstuna Middle School, which takes pupils up to the age of 17, 60% of them with mothers who have Swedish as a second language. So white people are the minority in the school. 40%, maybe less than that, are white. So all the Swedes have really been replaced in this area. And the result from that is this huge increase in crime. She says that since the latest shootings, the younger children have asked her if they can have bulletproof vests to wear to lessons. She told us, "We have boys leaving school who don't go on to further education. They drop out and turn away from our society into a life of criminality." And another reason for that, again, is because they don't have a large community of their own people. They're not living in their country of origin. They're living in somebody else's country. If these were Somalis living in Somalia, they wouldn't do that. They would be encouraged to work. They wouldn't have these gangs there that are preying on the community. The same in Afghanistan. They would end up having to go out and get a job. It's because they're living in a country that is not their original country that they can get away with this and think, well, why shouldn't we do this? I mean, we're just getting paid by this other people group. We're not draining our own people group of resources here. We're draining the Swedish group. Why not take the benefits from the Swedes? Of course, they wouldn't be able to do that in their own country. Eskilstuna's mayor, Jimmy Jansson, is unsurprised. Even before the election results showed that right-wing parties had won half the votes in his town, he warned that a tragedy was befalling Sweden. And that's interesting, isn't it, that the right-wing parties won half the votes in his town. That means that all the white people there voted for these right-wing parties. They were sick of this liberal progressivism that's been going on in Sweden that's responsible for all this terrible crime wave that's going on there. The 44-year-old, a leading light in the Social Democrats, said a pandemic of shootings, rapes and drug dealing by young men was sweeping the country. Of 8,200 people counted by Swedish police as criminal gang members last year, almost 15% were under 18. So they're so young that they can't actually give them a proper prison sentence. I am working class, but I didn't deal drugs or fire guns as a teenager, he said. The youngsters shooting at the playground are in our local school right now. They have a double life, being criminals at night and pupils by day. They are chameleons. So why are they there? Why hasn't this been dealt with? If he's the school teacher, he knows who it is that's carrying out these shootings. Why hasn't it been dealt with? He insists that most were born in Sweden to migrant families given refuge years ago. Others arrived as children in 2015, 2016, he says, during the biggest migration wave into Europe since World War II. So it's not just newcomers, it's second generation immigrants. And a lot of people will say the first generation immigrants tried to fit in and they'd wear a suit and a tie and they're very polite. But then the second generation don't try to fit in and they identify with their ethnicity and they will wear clothes to mark them out as being different to the indigenous people, and they will be far more likely to create problems. And this is what we saw with ISIS and people in Britain that were going off to join ISIS. They were all second generation immigrants rather than newcomers that had just come to the country. Mr. Jansson said his party once believed that Sweden's terrifically strong welfare state, offering free education, housing, medical care and copious child benefits, could cope with any problems of incomers with ease. We did not understand that some don't want to join our society, that they come here to live but not to work, he explained. They are not interested in Sweden or its culture. We reach out to them, but they don't want to be reached. And that's just it, isn't it? You get the criminal-minded types that will move there just because they want to take from somebody else and they want to carry out crime. And with these gangs, you end up with whole families that are involved in gangs over there. Grandparents, parents, children, and they're all a part of the community. They're all a part of the expat community, the immigrant community, and the immigrant community is not going to inform on these groups to the police. And you end up with these complete no-go areas as well. This sorry state of affairs, he said, has angered ordinary Swedes who believe their generosity to immigrants has been hurled back in their faces. Well, yes, they have been taken advantage of, and that is what is going to happen. These ethnicities, there are different ethnicities. They're not going to respond in the same way that, say, a Swede would, who was being helped out. I mean, it says in the Bible that you should cast your bread upon the water so that it comes back to you, which effectively means you should be charitable to your own people, and that charity will then come back to you. But if you're being charitable to another people group, that's got no chance of ever coming back to you, has it? That charity is then going to go around in the other people group. It's just been drawn from your people group and into their people group. So it's quite obvious that if they try to reach out and say to the people, well, come and move to our country and we'll look after you, that there's not going to be any benefit to that. I mean, if they say, stay in your own country and we will try to help you there, then that is going to be much better, isn't it? I mean, it's still charity that is being taken abroad, but it's not charity that's going to end up in harming the people in your own country when the crime rate goes through the roof. Before the election, Mr. Jansson was called a racist by left-wingers because, unusually among his party's politicians, he argued for a halt in immigration, saying Sweden should not pour petrol on a burning fire. He insists that family benefits should also be cut, so migrant families are encouraged to have fewer children. The current system gives an extra monthly sum for each new baby, and he supports harsher punishments for possessing a gun. And we do see that non-whites are a lot more fertile than white people. They will have four or five children. And a lot of them will say, you know, this is the birth jihad. We're going to replace you demographically within a few years. You're not producing children. We are. And we don't have to lift a finger. And we will outnumber you. And they're deliberately doing this, or at least some of them speak about this. I've heard them speaking about it and boasting about what they're doing and how they will end up replacing all the Swedes or all the white British within a few years. In Sweden's lax youth penal system, a convicted murderer aged under 18 serves just 2 or 3 years in a reform establishment. Mr. Jansson said it could be too late to save Sweden if nothing is done now. And again, there is this concentration on helping the criminal rather than helping the victim. And this is going on throughout the Western world. In America now, we have people, they're doing away with bail. So people that have committed horrific crimes are just turned back out onto the streets to carry out more crimes. We cannot deport foreign criminals because it goes against their human rights. And as we see here, what happens in Sweden, you can have a convicted murderer, one of these gangsters that's still at school, and all he gets is 2 or 3 years. In a reform establishment. In a way, Sweden has cooked its own goose. During the migration crisis 7 years ago, when 1 million refugees came to Europe from Syria, elsewhere in the Middle East and Africa, at least 160,000 were welcomed here, despite the country's comparatively small population, which was then 9.5 million. And I would question that figure. I should imagine they actually took in a lot more than 163,000. Sweden believed the bulk of the newcomers were Syrians fleeing war, but many turned out to be Afghans, Iraqis, Iranians, and Africans, pretending to be genuine asylum seekers. At that time, if you put asylum in Arabic into an internet search engine, Sweden came out as the top result. And of course, Sweden has a very high standard of living. If you're going to get paid benefits in Sweden with the exchange rate, that's going to be worth an absolute fortune back in Africa. And if Sweden said, we're going to take in anybody who is Syrian, and of course, these refugees, they throw away their passports and then they claim to be Syrian. And to all intents and purposes, the country that they're going to has no idea who they are, so they just accept them as being Syrian. So you ended up with all different potpourri of races turning up actually in Sweden, all claiming to be Syrian. And that wasn't just happening in Sweden, it was happening all over Europe. The country was such a popular destination that it became the fastest growing EU nation, accepting 1 in 7 of all arrivals, more per capita than any other member state. And of course, they'll look at that and they'll say, oh, isn't it great? You know, Sweden is growing so fast, but not growing with Swedes, growing with people that want to parasite off Sweden. The result was a brutally damaging culture clash. Many of the incomers found it difficult to settle happily in the ultra-liberal Western society they had come to join. Of course, this is the other thing. A lot of them were Muslim. They come from very right-wing mentality. Women should be covered up. And then they're moving to a country that used to be famous for the pornography that it used to produce. So, of course, they're going to think this is disgusting. Look at these horrible, degenerate white people. And that's going to cause friction between the two groups as well. There were other serious consequences too. Only this week, a Twitter feed detailed a rape epidemic against women and men in Sweden. It republished data from Swedish national TV, later reported by the BBC, showing that 58% of men convicted of rape and attempted rape over the 5 years to 2018 were born abroad. So that's probably 3 or 4 times as many as their percentage of the population, which shows that they are 3 or 4 times more likely to rape than natural-born Swedes are. The Swedish broadcaster, which counted all court convictions, revealed that in cases where the victim did not know the attacker, the proportion of foreign-born offenders was 85%. So if those immigrants were not in Sweden, if Sweden had not opened up its borders and allowed immigration from all over the world, 85% of the rapes in Sweden would not be happening. 85% of those women that were raped would not have been raped. And this is the issue here. And there were people that say, well, if the foreigners hadn't done the raping, then Swedes would have done the raping. But that doesn't stack up, does it? Because before the foreigners were there, they didn't have this incredibly high number of rapes that was happening in the country. And again, the reason for it is because of the different cultures that some of these different ethnic groups have. They have cultures where if women are walking about uncovered, then they're just seen as fair game, as if they're tempting the men. It's their own fault they were tempting the men by not covering up. That's why they got raped. And they will use excuses like that in the court. And they'll say, well, I come from a different culture where it's accepted to do things like that. So the findings were in line with more recent Swedish studies and others from Switzerland, Norway, Finland and Denmark. So they're saying Switzerland, Norway, Finland and Denmark, in the statistics there, they are also finding that the proportion of foreign-born offenders in rape is about 85%. So in all of those countries, about 85% of the rapes would not have happened if it wasn't for the government's policy of multiculturalism. Among the most worrying results of the Swedish research, the TV programme added, was that other than Swedes, Afghans were the most common nationality among the convicted rapists, numbering 45 out of 843 people. And Austria also pointed this out, that there was a particular problem with Afghans and rape. The programme's editor did note, however, that the total number of reported rapes in Sweden, as opposed to court convictions, was a far higher figure, so no final conclusions could be drawn on immigrant involvement in the sexual attacks. Of course, that's the mainstream media's attempt to deflect attention from this. A former police officer from Afghanistan helping young Afghans to settle in Sweden told the programme that the attitudes of some youngsters towards sexual equality differed significantly from views in their adopted country. So he's basically saying what I was just saying there about these cultural differences. The Twitter feed included a shocking video allegedly posted recently by a 24-year-old migrant living in Sweden on his Instagram account. It shows him punching a seemingly unsuspecting girl with overlaid text referring to her as a whore. In another video in the feed, a man says to the camera, "We Arabs are here to take over your effing country, you Swedish whore." 2 weeks after this video was recorded, the man was arrested on suspicion of raping another woman, the Twitter feed claims. So this is the attitude that some of them have. Not all of them, of course, but this is the attitude that some of them have. They are moving into Western countries with the intention of demographically taking over the country, and this is the way that they behave. They will attack the indigenous people and they will rape them, and most of the time their crimes will be covered up by the mainstream media because they don't want to be accused of hate speech, they don't want to be accused of giving ammunition to the far right, and they want to try and pretend that diversity is a strength rather than diversity leading to higher rates of rape and murder. The fact is, Sweden was so overwhelmed by sheer numbers that it had little time to check the identities or backgrounds of migrants during the first wave of arrivals in 2015-2016. Council flats in towns such as Eskilstuna, already hosting refugees, were allocated to the newcomers. They were encouraged to live together in the same areas in a gesture of kindness, and many now say huge naivety by Swedish policymakers. This had a doubly negative effect. First, native Swedes became disgruntled, and some remained homeless as migrants were pushed ahead in the state housing queue. And second, the areas where migrants settled became ghettoised, full of predominantly Arabic speakers who often viewed the police as the enemy and ignored local laws, such as the compulsory wearing of cycle helmets and street smoking bans, as crime rates soared. Now Sweden's liberal political elite face uncomfortable questions from the nation's own citizens about the kind of society it has become and will be in the future. According to the independent Pew Research Center in the US, by 2050, Muslims could make up a third of the Swedish population if migration remains at previous high levels, alongside a fall in the birth rate among native Swedes. And of course, we just heard there about this Muslim that was talking about how they're going to take over the country. By 2060, the indigenous British are forecast to be a minority within their own country. In February this year, a controversial imam, Basim Mahmoud, based in an immigrant enclave of Malmö, claimed Muslims would soon take over Sweden. The imam, who has called Jewish people the offspring of pigs and apes, saying he was quoting Islam's Quran, proclaimed in a recorded speech, "Sweden is ours in 10 or 15 years, whether they, the Swedes, like it or not." And you can find lots of videos on Twitter that are showing these newcomers saying things like this to Swedes, saying things like this to the French, saying things like this to the British. There is a portion of them that are just doing this deliberately. I'm sure there are others that are genuine asylum seekers or genuinely trying to just do what's best for themselves in the world. But there is a large portion of them that see this as conquering the non-Muslim or conquering the white people, getting their own back for so-called oppression in colonialism. It was a brave senior police officer called Peter Springer who a few years ago first publicly exposed the immigrant crime wave dogging Sweden, which has led to this week's political swing to the right. In an online posting, he wrote of his working week, "This is what I have handled between Monday and Friday. Rape, rape, robbery, aggravated assault, and rape, extortion, blackmail, assault, violence against police, threats to police, drug crime, felony, attempted murder, rape again, extortion again, and ill treatment. Countries representing the crimes this week, Iraq, Turkey, Syria, Afghanistan, Somalia, Syria again, Somalia, etc., etc." Inevitably, the police officer was hauled before Swedish officials for committing a hate crime. In the end, after public protests supporting him, no action was taken. So he was accused of being a hater for pointing out who it was that was actually carrying out all these crimes in Sweden. It was revelations such as his that pushed Mikael Stromberg into politics. A would-be MP and official of Eskilstuna's Sweden Democrats, he told us before the election, "Everything must change to save Sweden from disaster. We have shootings at the weekend, the weekdays, all day and night time, outside schools, children's nurseries and in playgrounds. Every 10th shooting in Sweden, whether it kills or not, happens in Eskilstuna. Sweden is today the most dangerous country in Europe, and Eskilstuna is the most dangerous place in Sweden." He used to be an international technical consultant, but gave up his career to enter politics. "I thought I won't be able to look my son in the eye when he is 15 if I do nothing to help Sweden." And that's what everybody should be thinking. You should be thinking about the next generation. I mean, that's what it means to be a nationalist. You think about the people that came before you, and you think about the people that come after you. And you show your gratitude to the people that came before you by doing what you can to help the people that come after you. The 42-year-old, his wife and two children, aged 4 and 6, used to live in an apartment in a pink-painted block just a stroll away from Eskilstuna's main square. "We couldn't stay," he says. "There were too many shootings and even rapes right here in the town. I was afraid for my children and for their future. Also worried about the future is Christian, the Swede begging for coins in central Stockholm. His vote last weekend, unsurprisingly, went to the Sweden Democrats, because he believes the party will bring help to ordinary Swedes like himself. And it is clear that many others in this well-meaning but now beleaguered nation feel the same way." So let's hope that the Sweden Democrats do end up having a large say in this new coalition government. And let's hope that we also see a swing to the right in Italy's upcoming elections. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless. And hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.